would improve things.
That'll pick up.
All right. Very good. Well, we are in Leviticus. If you want to be turning there, appreciate Barry doing the introduction for me last week while I was in Texas. And we had a good time. We were with my family, and just about all of us were together. And that is a rare thing to happen with my mom in Tampa and my sister in Arkansas and Michael in Texas, Matt in Los Angeles. So we were somehow, I don't know why we chose Texas, but we did. And so it was fun. And then I preached for Michael, and then we got back late Sunday night, 11:30. So we're glad to be back home. We're going to be looking primarily at chapter 1 of Leviticus. I'm not sure how much to say as far as introduction, since we've already had an entire class kind of introducing the book. But at first, whenever I would do my, I'm going to read the Bible in a year, I would usually get to Leviticus. And that's, so my first, we had a chronological Bible. And the first eighth inch of that Bible was pretty worn. Right up to Leviticus. that was in my younger days. But anyway, we sometimes, I think, can look at Leviticus as being kind of tedious. And looking at all the sacrifices and the rules. So the more we look at this book, I think the more exciting it's going to get for us. And I think really keeping the chronological timeline is helpful to me in Leviticus. So we look at the story of Exodus, and they basically cross the Red Sea, and they arrive at Mount Sinai, and what event, bad event, happened there at Mount Sinai in chapter 32 of Exodus? The golden calf, which kind of separated the people from the Lord in their sin. And then what's the last part of Exodus? Kind of the climax, if you will, of the book. Latter part of the book, for sure. What is that dealing with? Yeah, good. So the building of the tabernacle. And at the very end of that, we have God entering the tabernacle, right? We call it the Shekinah glory. I don't know why, but Sloan knows, so whatever, just ask Sloan. Why do you call it that? Sloan will give you a good answer. And so we have God entering, but we're kind of left with this question: how are the people going to be with God since they've kind of separated themselves from Him? So the book of Leviticus kind of is our story as well. We have separated from God due to our sin. And how do we reconnect with God? And so a lot of the New Testament deals with the idea of being holy. For I am holy. Peter says that, I think, in chapter 1 of 1 Peter. And I think the verse that was put forth last week of Hebrews 12, verse 14, is a helpful verse. And basically it just says, strive for holiness, along with other things. So that's the idea. How do we be holy? How do we strive for holiness? And that's something they needed to work on, something certainly we need to work on as well. So there's some exciting aspects of this book. I had a good run with this microphone, but it ended tonight. I just need some duct tape. Oh, that, well, there we go. Thank you. Now we're going to be you're going to be going just fine from here on out. All right. Sorry for the delay. Okay, thank you. So, I've heard this, and I'll just be up front with you. This is my first time studying the book of Leviticus in depth, in detail. So I look forward to kind of learning with you or you helping me understand this book better. So I think this will be very helpful for all of us as we go through this. Someone said, I don't know it to be true, but I trust the source, that said, God speaks directly to his people in Leviticus more than any other book. And so that's kind of exciting to see God speaking directly to his people. So that's one aspect that we can be excited about. Now, if you think about the span of Genesis, how many years the history of Genesis is, can someone just give a ballpark? How many years from Adam, from creation to the end of Joseph? How many years are we roughly talking about? 2000? It's in the thousands. Yeah, I think maybe even more than that. And then what about Exodus? You think about the history of Exodus. So now we're at kind of the birth of Moses, if you will. Well, maybe before that, to Mount Sinai. Okay, yeah, so we're talking about 40, maybe 50 years, depending on where you count from. Anyone guess the time span of Leviticus? 1 month. So thousands of years, 50 plus, and now 1 month. So it's a very concentrated time span. So that's exciting. 1 month, all of this is given to us in that time. And it's very much, and we discussed this a little bit, a companion book of Exodus. Exodus kind of stops at the tabernacle, and then it flows right into the story of Leviticus. So Leviticus tells us what God desired to be done I had that wrong. So Leviticus tells us really how to be holy. There's a neat kind of how Leviticus is, outlined or put together. And I'm going to look at that a little bit more next week and kind of show you. But I'll tell you the pinnacle of the book is kind of right in the middle. And that is the celebration of the Day of Atonement. Would you kind of agree with that? We'll kind of look more at that, but it's very kind of starts and ends the same, and you kind of have that picture there where the climax is in chapter 16, 17. But we have kind of beginning here in chapter 1, how it starts, the Lord called Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, where's the next time you kind of see that same phraseology that the Lord spoke to Moses? Where's the next time you see that in Leviticus? Just kind of skimming through. Okay, good. Chapter 4, verse 1. And then the next time, we have chapter 5, 14. Is that where y'all are seeing it? And then we kind of see it pretty often after that. You'll see the beginning of chapter 6, and then chapter 6, verse 8, so forth and so on. So that's kind of how we're going to divide this book up, just kind of looking at those signals, those phrases that we see reoccurring. So we're looking at kind of the first three tabernacles. The first three tabernacles. I'm sounding like Peter, right? On the Mount of Transfiguration, the first sacrifices. So we're going to primarily look at the first one, the idea of the burnt offering tonight. So uh, So the Lord spoke to Moses, and who is he addressing? Who is Moses addressing there in verse 1 and 2?
Everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's why I even asked that question, is so many times I have thought of the book of Leviticus is to the people of Levi. And I think that's something that I've gotten wrong. This is a book to everyone. This is a book to all the sons of Israel. So a lot is certainly towards the role of priests and their duties, but this is to everyone. And so we have verses 3 through 6, and I'll just kind of read the whole chapter all at once, and then I'm going to ask you, how would you divide it up? How would you outline this chapter? Let's just start in verse 2. Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when any of you brings an offering to the Lord, you shall bring your offering of livestock from the herd or from the flock. If his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, he shall offer a male without blemish. He shall bring it to the entrance of the tent of meeting, that he may be accepted before the Lord. He shall lay his hand on the head of the burnt offering, and it shall be accepted for him to make atonement for him. Then he shall kill the bull before the Lord, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall bring the blood and throw the blood against the sides of the altar that is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Then he shall flay the burnt offering and cut it into pieces, and the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall put fire on the altar and arrange wood on the fire. And Aaron's sons, the priests, shall arrange the pieces, the head and the fat on the wood that is on the fire on the altar. But its entrails and its legs he shall wash with water, and the priest shall burn all of it on the altar as a burnt offering, a food offering, with a pleasant aroma to the Lord. If his gift for a burnt offering is from the flock, from the sheep or goats, he shall bring a male without blemish, and he shall kill it on the north side of the altar before the Lord, and Aaron's son and the priest shall throw its blood against the sides of the altar. He shall cut it to pieces with its head and its fat, and the priest shall arrange them on the wood that is on the fire on the altar. But the entrails and the legs he shall wash with water, and the priest shall offer all of it and the burnt and burn it on the altar. It is a burnt offering, a food offering, with a pleasing aroma to the Lord. If his offering to the Lord is a burnt offering of birds, then he shall bring his offering of turtle doves or pigeons, and the priest shall bring it to the altar and wring off its head and burn it in the altar. Its blood shall be drained out on the side of the altar. He shall remove its crop with its contents and cast it beside the altar on the east side in the place for ashes. He shall tear it open by its wings, but shall not sever it completely. And the priest shall burn it on the altar in the wood that is on the fire. It is a burnt offering, a food offering, with a pleasing aroma to the Lord. Okay, so if you're looking at that section, and I'll just kind of start with verse 3, because I think verse 2 is kind of a introduction verse for the first 6-7 chapters, where it says, when one of you brings an offering to the Lord, you shall bring your offering of livestock. Then it gets more specific in verse 3, if that offering is a burnt offering. So that kind of sets up, in my mind, the rest of this first section here in Leviticus. So how would you arrange this chapter, starting in verse 3? Where would be your first break? Yes, ma'am.
I organized it by first the bulls, then the sheep or goats, then birds.
Great, good. So hopefully y'all saw that, heard that. So kind of 3 through 9. Right? If you're looking at that, and then 10 to 13, and then 14 to the end. So we kind of see the livestock and the sheep and goats, and then onto the birds. Anything about that order that you kind of notice?
Descending.
Yeah, it's a descending in value of what is offered.
But they're all the same. They're all burnt offerings,
yes.
Food offerings.
That's right. Yes, so they are similar, that they are all burnt offerings.
And they're all pleasing.
And they all end the same way. That's exactly right. And that's a key point that I want us to take from this first lesson. All three of them have the ability to be pleasing to the Lord. So let's just kind of go through this. But before we do that, any thoughts or comments? Yes, ma'am. That's right. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Because there's other offerings they're going to make that isn't for that, as well as for sins that different.
Yes. Yeah. So this is all for atonement. And my plan at the end is to see the connection to Christ in this. And we'll look at Hebrews 10 and I think other helpful texts that kind of show how this is significant to us, because so many times when I've read this in the past, I'm like, well, this doesn't really have anything to do with me. I'm under the new law, and I can just be grateful I don't have to do all these things. That's how I've read it in the past. But if you look at all the connections of the burnt offering, especially in the New Testament, how Christ is our burnt offering, and how we are to be sacrifices to the Lord, it really kind of brings that out. Any other? Yes, sir.
We assume that this was an ongoing process during this time. Like, was it 24 hours a day? Because if you think about it, the damage, you know, sacrifice and how much smoke would be going up.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So the idea of the tabernacle or the temple area, now, it's mentioned of the altar. You're going to put the blood on the altar and all that. What altar are we talking about? Just so we're all on the same page. I should have put a picture of the tabernacle.
Is this where the fire is?
Where the fire is, yes. I would agree with that.
I might be confusing the basin.
Okay.
There's a bowl facing northeast, south, and west. Isn't that where the altar was?
Okay, so yeah, we're in the kind of the outer court. Well, the inner court. Inner court, we're not in the tabernacle, right? But there's a kind of a bronze altar, right? And so that's kind of where all this is taking place. So they would bring that to the priest. So looking at 3 through 9, I'm going to try to go through this quickly, but I want you to be impressed with something. Yes, sir.
Just an interesting point to me is that the labor of the basin of water and the altar are outside the court.
Yes.
And they're in that order. You first go to the altar
where the
offerings are offered, then you go to the labor and you wash yourself.
Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, they probably were covered in blood anyway.
They needed that water for sure. Yeah, if you kind of look at it, you get the sacrifice and then the washing, and then you can enter into the tabernacle, which is very, very symbolic. Do you have something?
I have a question.
So yeah.
Here, it's interesting how often this says the one doing the offering?
Yes.
But and this might be information we're supposed to learn elsewhere.
Okay.
There are some sacrifices that are offered, I say, by the priest, it seems, whereas there are some sacrifices that I am called to offer myself. Which is this? This burnt offering, am I the, for example, when it says the one presenting the offering must slaughter the bull.
Right.
Is Adam the
yes.
the man from the tribe of Judah supposed to, is that, am I the one offering, or is
that's
this
right.
the Levite?
That's right. You would be the one offering.
That's interesting to me because
yes.
you know, I've never thought about that. And here,
right,
this indicates that historically, I've usually thought of the priest as doing, like, I cart my goat in, or my,
yeah,
you know, cow in, and or bull in, and
here you go.
I say, hey, Barry, so glad you're a priest.
Have fun,
Levite. You guys go at it.
Let's yeah.
go when it's done.
Yeah.
And this yes. is much more. Yes. I'm the one who's supposed to.
That's right.
I'm the one who's supposed to separate the meat. I'm the one who's supposed
that's
to.
That's right.
And that's way different than what I've usually thought.
And me too. And me too. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to look at in this text. So starting in verse 3, can you start listing for me all of the things that Adam has to do from the tribe of Judah for this sacrifice? We're just putting Adam on the block here. So what's the first thing you see someone... Okay, good. So in this case, Adam is an owner of a herd or a flock. And so that would be what animals? Of course, bull is listed here. What other animal would that include?
Goat or sheep.
Goat or sheep are next, I think. So maybe like a ram? Cattle? Okay, ox. Okay, so something of that.
So if Adam didn't have an animal without blemish, then did the gate have to go buy one from somebody else?
Good questions. See, you're not supposed to ask questions I don't know, but that's going to be the majority of the questions here because I'm going through it. Yes, sir. So it'd just go down if he didn't have, if his, yeah, maybe so. Maybe that's the best answer. Good. Okay, so he would bring, and what's the idea? Why would he bring it from his herd or his flock? What's significant about that? That may seem like, well, duh. but what are some...
It's his sacrifice.
Exactly. So this is someone... thought of this idea of if you are going to offer a deer, wouldn't it be good if you accidentally hit a deer with your car? You're like, great, I'll just take this stupid thing that ran out in front of me. Is that a sacrifice? Well, no. So the idea is this is an animal that you have been with, and what's the idea of unblemished? What would be the significance of that? Yes, yes. Exactly. Yes, sir. Okay.
And they would take those and they would put them up. They would be segregated to where they couldn't be lost or damaged or anything.
Right.
And most likely because of that, they would become the family pet. They would be fed.
Okay.
They would be
special care.
Special care.
Yeah.
And if you had more than one of them, it was extremely rare.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's what they're trying to say to you. It's totally set apart from the other herd.
Good.
Plus it would be breeding stock. That's the animal you would want to breed with to
right.
make more.
Sure.
Of like the better.
Kind of the purebred type idea.
Of healthier, better,
sure.
prettier.
Good. Animals. Can you think of go ahead.
Well, you kinda hinted at this, but I think we skirted past it when we kind of skip verse 2 a little bit.
Okay.
But he does call out that it's from a domesticated or from the herd, right? Maybe that's, I'm looking at a little different version, but like you can't, it's from a herd. It's not from a wild animal. Cannot fit in this at all. It has to be
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah, from a livestock or herd or from a flock, not some wild animal you find that you come across.
Or just animal. Like there are in American history, like there were buffaloes and there were animals
sure.
that would fit most of the sacrificial
right.
requirement that were around.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I think the main thing is this had to be something that costs.
Yes.
In other words, it's a sacrifice.
Exactly.
It's going to come out of your pocket, so to speak.
Yes.
When you sacrifice this animal.
That's exactly right. Yes. And that's what God desires, right? A sacrifice. If I just go find an animal, and that's not much of a sacrifice on me. If I'm sacrificing an animal from my livestock or herd, I have really zero clue about much of that. But that animal would be good for work, and I could probably sell that animal to someone, gain some money. But that is given to the Lord. Now, fast forward many, many years to Malachi. And you remember Malachi 1, where what they are sacrificing to the Lord?
The lame and the old.
Yeah, the blind, the lame. God wants a something. I'll just give them, this thing that keeps running into the fence, I didn't need him anyway. Well, that's not much of a sacrifice. And God says, well, you wouldn't even offer your governor that. And here you are offering it to me. So God deserves the best. We're not making it very far. Maybe I need to speed it up here. Okay, so notice verse 4. What is the offerer doing in verse 4?
Laying his hands.
Okay. And so he's laying his hands on its head, right? And the idea of kind of pressing this animal's head down, and then what does he do? Yeah, cuts its throat, probably just kills it. Now, okay, I'm not a hunter, and I don't plan on being one, and I don't like blood, and so this would be very hard for me. And how? Go ahead. Yes.
Kill it and it would give you.
Right.
I guess it's okay, this is how bad the sin is. You gotta kill it. God's saying you gotta kill it.
Exactly. And it's for atonement.
The idea of placing your hand on the head is that once you cut your throat, you have to feel the life going out.
Okay.
That's the idea.
Yeah. And if to your previous point, if that's your prized animal and if that's your pet, that and it's for atonement. What's the idea of atonement?
Making a payment for something you
did. Okay, so it's kind of covering something. If we are not atoned for, what's going to happen to us? Punishment. Yeah, judgment. So this is kind of atonement for that. Now, let me ask you, will you remember that? Going up, having your hand on that prized animal, killing it, and seeing the significance of that, that's going to stay with you. And that's a very valuable thing. Verse 5, I guess we covered verse 5. He slays the young bull before the Lord. And then the priest will kind of sprinkle the blood on the altar. Then what is he doing in verse 6? Yeah, I mean, this is very much on the offerer. Anything that the offerer can do, anything that Adam can do, he is allowed to do that doesn't involve the priest, that doesn't involve kind of the altar or anything like that. So I had the same idea as Adam did, maybe some of you did, just, okay, I'm going to have this sacrifice to the Lord, get him on a leash, and here you go, and man, I'll miss that animal. Now, you are very much a part of this whole process. And then verse 7 through 9, we'll again I'm going to skip to the beginning of verse 9. That's the last thing that the offerer does, is kind of wash the legs. But the rest of this is pretty much looking at what the priest does in verse 7, put the fire on the altar, arrange the wood. Verse 8, arrange the pieces of the animal on the altar. The priest shall offer up the offering by fire, latter part of verse 9, as a soothing aroma to the Lord. So I wanted just to notice some of this, that all of this, what's the purpose of this offering? And I think we've already said it, but say it again. What's the purpose of this offering? Okay, it's atonement. Look at verse 3. It's so that he may be accepted by the Lord. Kind of the same phraseology there in verse 4, so that it may be accepted for him to make an atonement on his behalf. So the animal has to be just right in order for you to receive atonement. And then verse 9, what's the end result if you do everything correct? It's accepted. It's a soothing aroma to the Lord. So this, the idea of this, you can bring joy to the Lord. That the joy kind of, this is a soothing aroma to him. So it's not that God is just really enjoying the smell of this. He's putting it in human terms so we can understand. But God is pleased with this sacrifice and therefore with the worshiper. But isn't it nice to know that we can be pleasing to the Lord after what we do to him? I find that very helpful.
You know, just thinking about this, I think as the offer, you would feel this great release of guilt.
Yes.
I mean, you finally go, okay, it's off.
Yeah.
That's very healing.
No kidding. Yeah, just have that idea of peace. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, we're not
going to
give her.
Well, okay. Well, sorry, we have to move on. If it's Janine.
Does the sacrifice per family? How often? Per year?
I think we're going to get into more of that. And we'll see more. It's not once a year, it's once a day?
It
two for the Sabbath?
After another. Constant.
Yeah. Good question. Sloan?
I mean, it was offered like periodically at festivals,
like
new moons, Sabbath,
okay.
Every week, and then there was twice daily, but it was also individual offerings on top of that.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just an individual offering. The interesting thing about these five offerings is the first three are what is called, what we would call free will offerings.
Okay.
He didn't say when and how often.
Okay.
Just like our giving. He didn't tell us how much.
Yeah.
So now with the sin offering, the trespass offering, you had
it. Okay.
Now, so there's a corporate time when the whole, you know, it's done as like every day, morning and evening, and so that's for the whole thing. But for an individual to do it, it's just free will offering. That's
okay.
He says, if when you bring it, you know, it's here, that's how you do it.
Okay.
It's kind of up to the individual how often he's going to do it. That's even worse.
You know, it is. Just tell me how many. Let's get this done instead of it's on you. That's a great question. Thank you for your help.
It's a recognition that you need to be cleansed.
Right.
And so how often do we need to be cleansed? How often do we need to go before God to ask for forgiveness? So that's what you're kind of looking at with these people here.
Good. Yeah. Now, go ahead.
But sorry, you're not getting very far.
I've thrown up the white flag in my mind.
But as we progress here, the idea that you know, if you have a bull, bring a bull. If you have a goat, bring a goat.
Right.
If you have a sheep, bring a sheep. If you don't have those things, like a bird, we can do a bird. That's fine.
Yeah.
I think that brings with it the idea that while, to Steve's point earlier, this is supposed to be a sacrifice That doesn't mean it's supposed to be onerous. And I think sometimes we confuse, am I sacrificing something with does it hurt? And like you'll sometimes hear people talk about, like, well, how much should we give? And how much should we help others? And, well, it should be a sacrifice. And unless you feel it, did you really sacrifice? And I think that misses the point here of God's focus here seems to be on, are you going to sacrifice? Like, I'm not going to make it where only rich people can sacrifice. Or
right.
You have to give up your family's entire food budget for the
right.
month to sacrifice. I'm going to make it where it is so available for
yeah.
you to make a sacrifice.
Sure.
That it seems that the Lord's focus is not so much on, like, was that sacrifice really a sacrifice for you? And more is, do you love the Lord enough to sacrifice?
Yeah.
Not so much about quantity, which, to the questions that you, I think you were headed down, like, that's the natural. How often do I need to do this?
What are
how
the rules?
How much is it supposed to cost?
Right.
You know, and how do I budget for this in my monthly budget? And
yeah.
that's, I don't think that's what Misses the Lord
the
is
point.
Going for here.
Yeah, I agree. So you get, I'm going to speed through here. I'm still optimistic. 10 to 13 is a burnt offering from the flock. So that's the sheep and the goats. And do you notice, this is going to blow your mind, there's more verses in the 3 through 9 section than there are in the 10 to 13 section or the 14. I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. Why is that? I think maybe one of the answers is 3 through 9 is kind of setting the groundwork for the others. It's not as detailed, but it's inferred that you do kind of those same things. Now, that's just a thought. Yes. That would be my take, that the procedure is the same. We're just kind of getting a brief way of saying it. So you still have a lot of work from the offerer when doing the sheep and the goats and all the same points that we were making. And the end effect is it's a soothing aroma to the Lord. Now, in the last section, 14 to 17, from the birds, it's really the priest doing most of that work. And everything is a soothing aroma to the Lord. I think a great point on that, it doesn't matter what you bring to the Lord, what you're able to bring to the Lord. What is the Lord more happy with, a bull or all the way to a bird?
Obedience.
Obedience, yeah. He's not, I mean, everything is his anyways. Paul makes that point in Acts 17, verses 24 and 25. It says, everything is the Lord's. It's not as though he needs anything. And that would be in contrast to the idol worship there in Athens. They would kind of feed their idols if they thought their God was mad. We'll feed him some stuff and maybe he'll be happy. God doesn't need that, but he is asking for it. Yes, sir.
What he's interested in is the heart of the individual.
That's right. That's right. So God desires, we'll get into, well, before I get into my stuff, any questions or comments just kind of on what we covered that first chapter? Yes, sir.
It's a great picture to go and see how God's mind is showing us what it means to be holy.
Yes.
Because he's telling us, you're approaching me and you need to be holy.
Yes. Yes.
This restoration theme that he's been trying to bring us back to him, even just from the times of Adam, and so from his sacrifices.
Yes.
A way for God to get us to restore that relationship.
Absolutely. So, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. This whole chapter, I want us to see, what do we learn about God in this? I think we can get so much into the details of, well, this is what you're supposed to do, and this, and this, and this. And if we miss God, then we've wasted our time, as far as I'm concerned, this morning. So what are some things that we learn about God?
But if you're coming
What sticks out to you?
I would say that God is in the details too, though.
I have that point. Yes.
Correct. Because he's instructing them on a specific way. And as we get deeper into the book,
yeah,
we see that very specific ways he wants things done.
Right.
How you do it, where you do it, when yes. you do it. And that's an indicator forward
yes.
for us and how we need to process our responsibilities to God, because really a lot, the specifics maybe have changed, but the principle hasn't changed.
That's correct.
God's the same.
God is the same. And you could ask, well, why does God put all these details on who does this and who does what and what you're supposed to do with the feathers and all that? Well, I'm jumping ahead to chapter 10 with Nadab and Abihu, but what did they do? They failed to do all the details. And how did God feel about that? Well, we know that answer. Yes, sir. That's right. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes. You know, if we see ourselves as separated from God, and God tells us this is the way for your sins to be atoned for, what should be our attitude in that? You say it, I don't care how crazy it is, I'm going to do it because that's the most important thing to me. And so that's the attitude that we need. It's not, well, I think I can do something better. I think I have a better idea. I can kind of skip this. I'll do it my own way. Yeesh. If you really want to be atoned for, you do it exactly as God says. And that's a significant part, I think, of all this. Yes, sir. Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. The rivers of Damascus are much better than this silly Jordan rut. Yeah, absolutely. So that's a strong point. God is a God of details. We mentioned this before. Anyone can worship God. It doesn't matter. Anyone can offer what they have, what God has provided for them. And end result, God is happy with that sacrifice if they do it the way they should. God desires a sacrifice from the worshiper. Well, phooey. I didn't get through it. We were going to start here in... we'll kind of finish this idea of atonement. And if you would, and I'll try to send out an email, put it in there, hopefully it comes out, of Hebrews chapter 10. And read the first 10 verses and try to connect it with this idea of a burnt offering a burnt offering to the Lord. So I'll send that out, and then we'll cover that kind of beginning next week. And then I would love to say we would get through chapters 2 and 3, but you know me better than that. So that's what I'm going to shoot for. Whether that happens or not, probably not. But if you would, read Hebrews 10, verses 1 through 10 for next week. Thank you.